And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 2nd, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, a little bleary-eyed after watching the debate last night until the very, very last minute. And I'm looking forward to discussing the surprise debate question that made you and I almost fall out of our seats. You and me almost fall out of our seats last night. And we offer, at the end of the show, we offer one way to help get out the vote. So tune in.
Well, Mariah, the long-awaited first debate of the presidential campaign occurred the other day. When the debate was originally announced, the moderator, a guy named Chris Wallace, who works at a network called Fox News, announced a list of questions, topics he wanted to talk about. And on that list of topics was not any question about climate change. They wanted to talk about the election, the economy, their records, yada, yada, yada. But nowhere in that was an explicit question on climate change. So my head started to explode and saying, well, what could the candidates do if they wanted to introduce the climate topic if there was not going to be any question? And you can easily imagine how climate change meshes into all of the other possible topics. And for me, it brings home the point that we should not be siloing climate change into some sort of particular topic, because climate change touches everything. But as we watch the debate, and I stalwartly, I think, did you make it all the way through the debate? I
mean, it was all the way, and then all the way.
It was tough for a while.
It was exhausting.
But towards the end of the debate, Mariah, you tell me, what happened at about an hour and 15 minutes into the hour and a half debate?
That's exactly right. I think it was right around 10:15 p.m. Chris Wallace asked a question about climate change. I think it was something along the lines of, I think it was directed at President Trump, and it was like, do you support the science of climate change and think that we should act on it, or something to that effect? And I think I almost fell off the couch.
It's like, I bolt upright. I mean, I was slouched in my reclining chair and just went straight up and watched. And so I guess the reason that I think the two of us were shocked, and most people who care about this stuff were shocked, is because there was not supposed to be a question. And an explicit question regarding the science of climate change, challenging the candidates to give an answer, it came out of the blue. Or I think more accurately, it came out of the successful efforts of grassroots people like the ones who listen to this podcast to pressure the system writ large to add questions about climate, right?
There was an article that came out a couple days before. It was an NPR article that came out on September 23rd, and it said very clearly that one thing that the candidates will probably not be asked about is climate. And yet then there was 36 senators, which were spearheaded by Ed Markey, who of course is the Democratic senator from here in Massachusetts, signed a letter to the Commission on Presidential Debates saying basically what you said before, that climate touches everything and it should be a question on the ballot. It's a question at the debate, not on the ballot, a question at the debate. So, they pointed to some of the various climate crises, the wildfires in the West and the hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico. And they said the climate crisis isn't coming, it's here. And any discussion on the economy, racial justice, public health, national security, democracy, or infrastructure is incomplete without addressing climate change and environmental justice. And I don't know if that's what pushed Chris Wallace, but you know, a lot of the things that he said when he was sort of pushing the candidates on this issue was, you know, he was certainly talking about the science of climate change, but was also sort of, he brought up the wildfires in the West, he brought up the hurricanes, and said, you know, really pushed back and said, what would you be doing to address climate change? Which, I mean, it was huge. It was impressive.
I mean, I think it was I wasn't keeping time myself, but I saw a statistic that said something like 11 minutes of the debate were tied up in discussion of climate, which I think is a good thing. I'm shocked. Good thing. I would come back. We'll come back to this topic at the end, but there's several more debates. I think the moderators cannot relax now and not ask more questions, right? But we'll come
back. Yeah. So there was a recent poll from Climate News. Climate News Vice Media Group and a couple other groups that found that 74% of voters said it's important to ask about climate change during the debates, which that's an impressive, an impressive amount. And the number of it has become climate issues have become a top priority for a lot of voters, which is, I think, sort of a first too. For many, many, many years, I feel like every time I've read about climate change, it's always been very low priority, right? Like maybe in the top 20, but like 19. And now it's finally right up at the front.
And I would volunteer that it rises in that perspective on that list because people begin to see the connections to other stuff, right? That it's not just a polar bear, right? A polar bear on an ice floe on the cover of Time magazine. That's who cares, right? As you start to connect it to fires and hurricanes, all of a sudden you begin to see it becomes more important because it's touching your life.
I know. I think, unfortunately, the reason that it's higher on people's radar is because people's lives are being drastically affected, sadly, you know. I'm glad.
I think it's useful to, shall we say, compare and contrast the answers that were given in the debate. So comparing and contrasting is what's the same between these two things and what's different between the answer that Mr. Trump gave and Mr. Biden gave. Just factually, it is true that the president, when he was kind of cornered, he tried to dodge it a little bit, but he finally said, yes, to an extent, greenhouse gases are causing climate change, right? And that is at least a statement that's on tape, right?
Yeah.
And when...
I mean, not just that, but he said to an extent, he believes that humans... Chris Wallace asked specifically, do you believe that humans have contributed to the greenhouse gases? And Trump said to an extent. So he acknowledged that it was human, it was anthropogenic.
Right. And then Wallace went on to talk about, to ask the next obvious question, which is, okay, what are you going to do about it? Right. If you sort of kind of believe to an extent, what are you going to do about it? And the president started to talk about one of his favorite topics, which is forest management, and how if people in California just raked up their forest a little bit better, they wouldn't have any forest fires, right?
And he went on to cite European countries, he said, that he didn't say which specific European countries, but there's European countries that are managing their forests well, and they don't have these problems with fires, was his big point.
And I don't, not to spend too much time on this kind of answer, just people should know that I think it's 57% of the land in the forests in California are owned by the federal government. So if the federal government thought that we should be raking the forest a little bit more, we could do that. But I think it's more interesting to think that the president talked about how we wanted to have crystal clear, beautiful air and water, right? Which is just this, which is an answer. Okay. It's an answer.
And plant lots of trees.
Lots of trees, and he also got into a little discussion about how it is that by having less fuel-efficient autos at a cheaper cost, people could trade in their 10-year-old clunkers, and then you'd have a net improvement, sort of an arcane argument as to why he should reduce the mileage per gallon. But that's what the president said. Flip side is Mr. Biden, who I guess this is where I have a little bit of a tough time with the Chris Wallace question. I think that he posed the question to Biden about the $2 trillion for the Biden plan. in the classic conflict between economic growth and environmental protection, right? Yeah. Isn't that going to be expensive, right? So the whole framing of the question was sort of right out of the Fox playbook. But I think that Biden did a reasonably good job of trying to talk to the potential job creation, right? Do you think that he did?
He did. I think he hit on two really critical points. He said, look, switching to a clean energy economy is going to create, you know, millions of new jobs, which is true. There's a very strong, Stanford University has done a whole lot of research on the job creation from business as usual and then from switching to a clean energy economy. And it turns out that switching to a clean energy economy creates about 2 million more, 40-year long-term good paying jobs than business as usual. So there's a lot of solid information that switching to a clean energy economy is going to be good for the economy in a lot of ways. And the other important point that I think Biden brought up is that we are spending billions of dollars on extreme weather cleanup and on all of the impact that we're getting from these extreme weather events. We're already spending, way too much money mitigating right. the problem. And so it makes sense to instead, fix the problem so we don't have it instead of, constantly trying to clean up the messes that they leave. So I thought he did a great job with that. I do think I had wished to see one of the candidates talk a little bit more about the fact that it's not just about the economy. Yes, of course we have to consider that, but it's also about, the livelihood of the American people. It's about having a planet to live on going forward. And sometimes you do have to, maybe it will cost us more money, but sometimes you have to make that leap because there's really no other option.
Yeah. I mean, I think let me just say the other thing that I heard Biden talk about before I go back to that point is that he pledged to rejoin the Paris Accord, which of course is a baby step. But I mean, Biden mentioned the fact that the United States has to be a global leader on this and get people all going in the same room.
And he talked too about how, when the United States pulled out of the Paris Accord, how deeply that damaged the Paris Accord. And he's absolutely right about that. And I think it was great that he recognized that and said, look, that was not okay. We haven't pulled out of the Paris Accord yet, but I think it's any day now, right?
Right.
I think
right. this day after the election.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I think that Biden, I guess, was not as eloquent as I would have hoped. Right? Given so, this is a surprise question, but he's talked about his own plan. It's not. I have not reviewed the tapes, as they say. One commentator, Emily Atkins, made the case that Mr. Trump did less of his trademark heckling during the climate section because he didn't know anything to say. Flip side is Biden didn't seem to be able to put together a coherent defense and presentation of his plan. I think at some level because of the interruptions from the president or maybe his own surprised at having to deal with the topic right off the cuff like that.
Yeah, and it's certainly, I think he seemed to really struggle with whether to embrace or eschew the Green New Deal. And I think that's an interesting dance because there's certainly widespread support for the Green New Deal from important voters for Biden's base. But on the flip side, it could be an alienating topic. At one point, Trump said the Green New Deal means that he wants to take away your cows, which right. is not the case. And that's, certainly I'll fact check on that one. It's definitely false. Biden just didn't seem to, I think at one point he said, I support the Green New Deal. I do not support the Green New Deal. It's not in my plan. So he really, he didn't right. say that same sentence, but he kind of went back and forth there a little bit.
And I think that it's a false choice because if it turns out that Bernie Sanders and AOC basically said, hey, we're good with Joe. And something that you and I have talked about a lot. I mean, the Green New Deal is not even defined. It's an 11-page double-spaced document, right? It's an aspirational thing, right? So there is no Green New Deal, whereas the Biden $2 trillion plan it exists, right? It's something you can shoot at. And I guess my feeling is that you know, I'll start with, we'll start with the $2 trillion. And I have a feeling Joe Biden, if he were to become president, would be open to additional action, right? So this idea that there's the Green New Deal and there's the Biden plan, they're somehow different, is something that only the opponents want us to think, right? And to generate tension.
I think that when Biden was first campaigning early on, he got some pretty low marks from some of the reviewing entities that were looking at the climate records of the all of the Democratic candidates. Mm-hmm. And he was among the lowest in terms of a climate plan. But since he's been elected, since he was chosen as the Democratic nominee, he has worked a lot, I think, with Bernie Sanders and AOC and maybe Ed Markey, I'm not sure, all of the people who were working with him. And his climate plan has come significantly, has become significantly stronger. Right. So, but, you know, I think that he still has this idea. And there's some question if he, does he have ties to fossil fuel companies, you know, to fracking companies? There, you'll hear that floated about. I don't know the particulars of that. But I think that he has come a long way with his climate plan and definitely has some really great things in there for moving the country forward in a positive way that's good for the economy, good for job creation, but most importantly, that's going to keep us having a livable planet for the future.
Right. I mean, and all we're doing, folks, is reporting the facts. What we see, I mean, on one side, I think it's fair to say that the like it, some people like it, right? I think that, you know, President Trump seems happy with accentuating economic growth and making sure that America has a lot of fossil fuels to use. The Biden plan seems to recognize stuff that we need to spend money in order to resolve the problem. There's two sides. I would urge anyone who's listening to go watch the debate and decide, you know, who they want to vote for, right? We're not making any recommendations here, but pretty interesting head-to-head comparison of the two candidates in real time, and you can decide which one's better. So I guess for my money, Mariah, the take-home lesson out of this is that grassroots activism, which probably culminated in the Ed Markey plus 35 other senators letter, right, that pushed the system, and it's a good thing. We should be proud of having demanded questions, and as we go into the additional debates, we ought to be demanding more questions of, I would say, non-siloed questions, right? The interaction of COVID and climate, the interaction of race and climate, the interaction of the economy and climate, all those things need to be put on the table and talked about more. And so I think it's a good day. I mean, this first debate is being analyzed in many quarters for many of its faults and warts and unhappy things that happened during it. But one thing that did happen was that a bona fide climate question was asked and the two candidates are on the record. Right, Mariah?
I think so. Absolutely. That is a win for the night.
I mean, we talked before about a get out the vote. Do you have websites about people who want, if they want to figure out how they're going to vote and et cetera, what they would go do?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the biggest and most important thing we have to do right now is to work really hard on getting people out to vote. And I've been using a nonpartisan, I don't know what you call it, organization called Vote Forward. And okay. I think it's voteforward.com. And they are just sending out, they give you a letter and it's got the name and address of someone on there that you can mail your letter to. And you put a little, it's a form letter, but you add a little personalized place about why it is that you vote. Why do you think it's important to go to the polls and vote? And then you send this handwritten letter to the person who is on your list, you know, and apparently the Vote Forward campaign said that it has increased voter turnout by 3%. By sending these letters, which I think is pretty substantial.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Using that. I've been having a good time with that. It's nice to write letters. And
well, it's very satisfying, I think, to sort of, you know, you have 10 letters, 10 people you sort of touched and said, at least you made contact. Good for you.
And it's nice to get a letter, you know, getting a text message or a phone call these days, it's overwhelming, but nobody gives you snail mail anymore. So
I tell you, what are our grandchildren going to do? They're going to be digging through old thumb drives in the attic to get letters from grandma, love letters from grandma. All right. Well, I tell you what we'll do, Mara. We'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have any ideas about what kind of questions should be asked in future debates or things like that, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Of course, you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to it on their favorite. You can find us by searching for Climate Minute, and we tend to be associated with the Massachusetts Climate Action Network as a related search term. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his research support. It helps us every week to figure out what's the most important things to talk about. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Well, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.